When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. That makes this Stuff You Should Know. Right, Chuck?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Terry, just I love it when like we get last-second instructions.
Yeah, and they don't make any sense.
Just save it for the show, guys.
Right, or show that picture on the podcast, the audio podcast.
Oh, goodness. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. It's by all rights Friday, but it's actually Thursday. But it's almost Memorial Day.
Yeah, and we're not, are you coming in tomorrow at all? No?
I'm not comfortable saying either way.
Okay. Well, I guess that'll be a surprise.
I don't want to get in trouble.
Well, I'm not.
I'm still scared of the man. I know you're not, but you're all like, hey, look at me. I'm 40. I make my own decisions.
I'm not 40.
Yeah. So, Chuck, you're a George Carlin fan, right?
Yeah, the late George Carlin.
Yes, the late.
R.I.P.
Always had the bummer, don't you?
Yeah.
The late George Carlin. You couldn't be like, George Carlin, he's the greatest stand-up comedian ever.
When he was alive,
he
was.
The worm food George Carlin.
The dearly departed. Yes, I like him. Why?
I have an obscure stand-up bit that I'll bet you haven't heard of that is apropos of our topic today.
Let's hear it.
So George Carlin had a bit about flamethrowers.
I never heard that one.
He said that the very presence of flamethrowers, and I'm paraphrasing.
Sure.
The very presence of flamethrowers means that at some point, sometime, someone said to himself, you know, there's a bunch of people over there that I'd like to set on fire, but they're too far away for me to get the job done.
Right.
I wish there was something that I could use to throw flames on them.
Uh-huh.
And as a result, we now have the flamethrower.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy.
When you think about it that way, it is pretty interesting.
It is. And when you start to really look into flamethrowers, you realize just how horrific the acts that humans inflict on other humans can be.
Yeah.
It's pretty awful stuff, actually.
Yeah, actually all kinds of modern weaponry. I know my brother-in-law's in the Marines. He told me about this, I think it's called a flechette, some sort of bomb that, like, explodes above people and sends thousands of, like, razor blades shooting out.
What?
Yeah. I think it's mainly used for clearing, jungle. But I can't
clearing
remember.
Jungle of enemy combatants.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So some sicko thought that up.
Yeah. We're like, what, one step away from the alien weapons in District 9.
Yeah.
Where people just blow up in an almost cartoonish fashion.
Right.
Yeah. It's coming 2015.
Sure. The atomizer or something they'll call it.
Yeah. What's odd is that first person that George Carlin envisions actually lived a lot longer ago than you would think.
I was shocked.
I was as well.
Fifth century BC?
5th century BC, man.
Right. It was a flamethrower. It was a very crude, vulgar, if you will, flamethrower. it was a long tube, sort of like a blowgun, and they filled it with solid stuff like hot coal and sulfur.
Mm-hmm. And went,
poof. Yeah. Ideally, you don't suck in. That would be bad.
No, I was thinking that, too. Like, you have to suck in the breath before you put the tube to your mouth, or else
right.
You're in big trouble. Although, that's the case with any blowgun, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Did you ever make those when you were a kid?
No, I never did. Right. I was too busy burning stuff.
You could have done both, apparently.
Yeah, true. Yeah. So, yeah, they would shoot, I guess, hot coal or sulfur out at their enemy combatant.
Right.
Instead of a flame, per se.
Yeah. Which I guess ultimately it would bounce off of their arm and they'd be like, ah, it burns.
Right.
And then they'd just tussle and leg wrestle and,
right.
and shake hands afterwards right. and go eat a boar. That's how that went down.
Life in 5th century BC with Josh.
But leave it to the Greeks, who were one of the brainiest, most thieving cultures of all time.
Oh, yeah.
They probably got this idea from the Chemites, frankly. But there's this stuff called Greek fire.
Right.
And actually, I can't say that the Greeks came up with it. It's called Greek fire, but the Byzantines, what we know as Turks, were most notorious for using this stuff.
Yeah, and that they think, they're not sure because it was a long time ago, it was a mixture of liquid petrol and sulfur and like stuff like quicklime.
Petrol.
Mm-hmm.
It's British for gas.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And they would pump it out, actually, from a reservoir through little narrow tubes, and like anything that goes from a big reservoir-type system to mm-hmm. a small, thin one, it would create pressure to shoot it out.
Right.
And then some unlucky guy would be the lighter at the end of it, and that would be like a real flamethrower, like dozens of feet.
Yeah, as we're going to learn, anybody whose job it was to deal with any aspect of flamethrowing was the unlucky guy.
Yeah, I would say so.
It's one of the more dangerous weapons you
sure.
can use.
Yeah.
But it was very effective. Number one, since it's oil-based, this Greek fire could be used in naval battles.
Yeah.
Because it would still burn even when it contacted the water.
Sure.
And so the Byzantines mounted it on their ships, these flamethrowers.
Yeah.
On their ships and on the city walls around Constantinople.
Yeah.
And basically just repelled people out of fear as much as, you know, burning them alive.
Yeah. Their enemies were really freaked out, I imagine, when they first saw, like, fire shooting at them.
Yes. Freaked out and intrigued.
Sure.
Especially in the case of the Chinese. See, what the Byzantines had was a single action pump.
You just did the foot pump with, like, you literally did the bellows.
Do you see that? Uh-huh. Do you see that, Jerry? I'm following your command. Hey, everybody. It's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace.
Hey friends, if you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. Like, what are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood the best? And why can't all this information just be in one place?
Yeah, well, now it is, everybody, on Homes.com. They've got everything you need to know about the listing itself, but even better. They've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools, and their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. Homes.com collaboration tools make it easier than ever to share all this information with your family.
It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com, we've done your homework.
The Byzantines had a single action bellows pump
right.
to where when you press down on the downstroke, it would push the liquid out, right?
Yes, so you get like a burst of fire and that's it.
Right, because on the upstroke, nothing was happening except
right.
the bellows were filling back up with air to press down,
right.
to compress, right? The Chinese said, hey, that's really funny because we have a double action bellows
yeah.
to where you are compressing air, on the upstroke and the downstroke. So instead of your stupid little short burst of Greek fire, we have one long burst that
yeah.
just cuts you in half.
Yeah. Leave it to the Chinese. Make
yeah.
it all better.
The wheelbarrow, the kite, the hang glider, the flamethrower.
You name it.
Gunpowder.
Uh huh.
And actually, gunpowder, equaled the demise of flamethrowers for about 1,000 years, right?
Yeah, as soon as gunpowder came along, they were like, "Yeah, we're just chumps with fire when we can actually shoot a gun." That's the way of the future,
right?
And it was, but so was the flamethrower, as it turns out.
Yeah, because it lay dormant for about 1,000 years, and then in World War I, actually right before World War I, the Germans, a very warlike state at the time, were they said, you know, what exactly can we add to our arsenal that is just totally scary and wildly destructive?
Yes.
Let's look back through the annals of you know, historic weaponry and find something. And they looked through and they said, the flamethrower.
Yeah, Richard Fielder is an engineer in 1901. They credit him with inventing it, but he clearly was using old technology as the initial idea, at least.
Right. It's a clever design, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because from this original design... there have been, you know, some polishing moments for the flamethrower over the years, but from that modern era, the right. design has remained relatively the same, right? It's like a 3-tank design.
Yeah, the Flammenwerfer.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Nice.
The Germans, that's what the Germans called
it. The Lederhosen?
Yeah. and it was, let's go ahead and explain how it works with
okay.
the tanks.
All right.
And this is the handheld flamethrower, which is the one that's, I guess, was most readily used in combat.
Yeah, and it's the one you see, like, a guy's wearing these tanks on his back, and he's got the rifle, and it's just...
Right.
Yeah.
So you got two outer tanks, and those are filled with the flammable fuel, oil-based petrol, if you will, like Greek fire.
Sure.
And then there's a center, smaller tank, which holds a compressed gas, like butane, and it would feed the gas through a pressure regulator connected to the tubes.
Right.
And you can... take it from here.
Well, this is why I think it's very clever. The butane served a dual purpose. One, it was compressed, so when you open the valve, it would push the liquid fuel out of the tanks into the tube and ultimately in the reservoir and the gun.
Yeah,
right?
The pressure regulator.
Right.
Is what they would
but
switch on.
There is another tube that came directly out of the third tank that held the compressed gas like butane.
Yes.
And this tube went directly... to the ignition valve.
Right.
Right?
So it served as the igniter later on.
Right. Because it was the butane that was actually burning.
Right.
When you open the ignition valve, mm-hmm. the butane flows to the end, mixes
right.
with air.
The end of the rifle.
Right.
Sure.
And then there's like, there's two triggers. There's the fuel release trigger, right?
Yes.
And then there's the ignition trigger. And the ignition
right.
trigger is basically you're operating a battery that operates a spark plug, sends a current, generates heat,
right.
ignites the butane. Now you have that little blue flame on the end.
Yeah, that's what you see in the movies. Like if you see them
like
trailing around. Yeah, exactly. You see the little like 3-inch flame coming out in the end.
Right. That's actually butane burning.
Right.
The fuel hasn't been released. The hellfire has not been opened yet or released yet. That's when you squeeze, what's the fuel release trigger?
Yes.
And then
Loose. That pulls back a little valve plug because you obviously want it plugged or else you're going to have a big mess on your hands.
Yeah.
You'll be on fire very quickly.
Yeah.
So when you pull the fuel release trigger, it pulls the little valve plug back and then all the fuel supply suddenly rushes through to the tip of the gun where the flame is mm-hmm. and boom, there you go.
Yeah. And in 1942, the Army Chemical Warfare Service, I think is what it was called, they came up with a little something called napalm.
Yeah.
Which is ultimately a gasoline or petrol, mm-hmm. in the case of Chuck and our British friends, a gasoline thickening agent.
Right.
So with a slightly thickened gas,
uh-huh.
you have a longer range. It
right.
carries further because it has more mass or girth or whatever. There's less... There's less friction from the ground coming up, right?
Sure.
It also can be concentrated more easily.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So basically that was one of those real big polishing moments. It went from just gas, which sprays, to thick gas, which sticks.
Yes.
And burns. It evaporates much less quickly, so it'll burn forever, and it's really difficult to put out. And if you get covered in it, you're entirely in trouble.
Yes, you're out of luck. And they would mount these on, PT boats, for one.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen the videos of those things, like cruising down the river, shooting napalm mm-hmm. into the forest?
Well, I see there's a picture of it in the article,
yeah.
but I've never seen video of it.
It's pretty wicked.
Yeah. They called them Zippo flamethrowers, right?
Oh, really?
Because the ignition system failed so frequently. It's just like on a gas grill.
Would they have to light it with a Zippo?
With a Zippo.
You're kidding.
No.
And that's the other unlucky dude, I guess.
Yeah.
He'd be like, don't get too close to it with his hand.
Right. And so flamethrowers, it wasn't just some guy, you know, where it'd be like a bunch of infantry guys and then some guy on the end happened to grab the flamethrower that morning when they went out and it's just, you know.
Right, right.
They were part of a tactical strategy.
Yeah.
What would happen was riflemen would lay down cover fire.
Right.
Let's say you come to the mouth of a cave and there's a bunch of enemy combatants in there and they're shooting you and they have snipers and you're in big trouble.
Oh, yeah.
All your riflemen lay down fire on this cave so those guys can't move.
Cover fire.
Right. Mm-hmm. To allow your flamethrower man to get close.
Who is highly susceptible at this point because right. of what he's wearing on his back.
Yes, all it takes is one good shot to one of those tanks, and that guy's gone.
Right, or a bad shot, just a shot.
Sure, yeah, uh-huh. If you come in contact with it with the bullet.
Yes.
But so the flamethrower guy gets close, basically cooks everybody, burns everyone to death in that cave.
Yeah.
Right? That's his job.
Right.
And then after that, the munitions guys come in and explode the cave so it can never be used again.
And that's sayonara.
Yeah.
For cave dwellers.
Yes.
You know, speaking of a quick death, I've always heard when I was a kid, you know, that, you know, if you were a flamethrower in war, your average lifespan is like 30 seconds in combat.
Is that right?
Well, I always heard that, and I'd scoured the internet, and I could not find anything to verify that. But that's what I always heard. I thought that was an interesting tidbit.
I did read that most people who were flamethrower operators didn't survive.
I would imagine. It's a pretty dangerous thing to be toting around.
Yeah, and they also had assistants because the assistants would open and close the valves on the pack for them. That was their whole job.
It was always a two-man team.
So both of them would usually not make it.
I would, if I was the assistant, I would turn on his little valve and then run for cover and then run up and turn it off again.
Right.
And I'd probably be pretty unpopular with the flamethrower guy.
Probably. And then the flamethrower guy was well-liked because if you can take out an entire gun nest of people,
oh, yeah.
then, you know, everybody's going to applaud you and clap and,
sure.
you know, probably not get too close, though, because you're going to die eventually.
Yeah, I'd rather be a sniper, I think. That'd be, like, I play Call of Duty. I got a PS3 now. Did I tell you that?
No. Wow, Chuck.
It was given to me by my father-in-law.
You did tell me.
My stepfather-in-law.
Okay.
And so I got just a couple of games. I'm not, like, a huge gamer at all. Like, I think a Nintendo, like, the first Nintendo was the last thing I actually owned.
Mm-hmm.
But I play Call of Duty now.
I like shooter games, too.
It's pretty fun.
But you choose to be a sniper on that?
Well, no, there are just certain levels where you can be a sniper. Like, you'll pick up a sniper gun if you want.
Gotcha.
And I always usually kind of just hang back and pick guys off.
Yeah. Especially guys with flamethrowers.
No. Here we go again. Two liberal peaceniks like us. When it comes to, like, this war stuff, we just get all giddy.
Well, it is. This one, for some reason, I was reading a passage about a flamethrower operator in World War II who, you know, received the Medal of Honor for invading a Japanese, I think they're called pillbox. It was a little gun nest.
And burning them all?
And burning them all alive. And, mm-hmm. like, the guy wrote that there were some muffled screams and then silence.
Wow.
It's like, you know, being burned alive is pretty much everybody's worst death.
I would think so.
It's up there.
Well, we had worst way to die. That's right up there.
And I think, if I remember correctly, burning to death is consistently the number one on, like, informal polls, right?
I imagine it's pretty painful.
And it happened a lot in World War I, II, Vietnam.
Yeah.
I imagine Korea. This is a horrible weapon, you know?
Absolutely.
But you can find civilian applications for it, can't you?
Yeah, well, before we move on to that, we also need to say that they were on tanks as well. So it wasn't just boats. They used them on tanks. And the design was basically the same. You just had a lot more fuel, and you had, like, piston rotary pumps to get a lot more length on your shot.
Girth.
And girth.
Yeah, the backpack-mounted ones
right.
had a range of about 50 yards, right?
Or
46
so.
Meters.
That's a long way, though.
Yeah. That's half a football field. You don't have to get that close.
Sure.
Yeah.
I wonder if the first enemy that was like, he's got a flamethrower, but we're way too far away.
Right. They were within like 45
yeah,
yards.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Civilian applications. Forest firefighters.
Forest firefighters?
Is that how you say it?
I don't know.
They actually use these when they do the prescribed burning. Like sometimes they'll burn, well, not just the firefighters. They do prescribed burns anyway.
Sure.
And then sometimes the firefighters do that. They'll like burn a section to cut it off there.
Right.
And that's what they do it with flamethrowers.
Yeah. Which actually kind of made me want to go get a job with the Forestry Service.
So you could burn things on purpose?
With the flamethrower, yeah.
Hey, friends. If you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. Like, what are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood the best? And why can't all this information just be in one place?
Yeah, well, now it is, everybody, on Homes.com. They've got everything you need to know about the listing itself, but even better, they've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools, and their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. Homes.com collaboration tools make it easier than ever to share all this information with your family.
It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com. We've done your homework. Hey friends, did you know that it's estimated that 85% of all customer service interactions are automated?
Yeah, it's true, and customers are the lifeblood of all business. So you probably don't want to put that responsibility in the hands of a robot. And that's why thousands of business owners call Ruby and hire them.
That's right. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special.
Yep, you definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would.
That's right. Finding someone who cares about your business as much as you do feels impossible at times, but the team at Ruby are experts in providing the best customer experience and turn every ring into a relationship.
Yep, this year can be your best year yet. Small, efficient changes can make a huge impact on your bottom line.
That's right, and Ruby answers all of your calls live from right here in the U.S. They'll take messages, answer questions, route calls, and much more. Visit ruby.com, or better yet, give them a call at 844-900-RUBY.
Did you hear about this car thing in South Africa? Theft deterrent system that burned you?
No.
Yeah, I don't think it's still around. This is like 12 years ago, and a South African man invented, it was called the blaster, and basically it would shoot a man-high fireball, is what they called it.
What?
At you if you tried to break in to the car for a mere 3,900 rand, which is about $650.
$7.
And this was $1,998. No, it was like $650.
Okay.
And it would squirt liquefied gas from a bottle in the trunk through two nozzles located under the front door, and the rub is you couldn't turn one on and turn one off. So if a guy was breaking in to like the driver's side door, it would still shoot fire out of the passenger side.
Wow.
To whomever might be walking by, unluckily on that side.
That's an invention that wasn't fully thought through.
I would think so, but apparently he sold a bunch of them at the time, and he said it's non-lethal, but it would definitely blind a person, is what he said. And keep them from stealing your car.
Yeah, because they can't see cars any longer.
Right, exactly.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
Way to go, South Africa. Lastly, Chuck, fire breathers, they're a form of, they follow the basic principles of flame throwing.
Yeah.
By drinking kerosene.
Yeah.
There you go. If you want to learn about fire breathers, we have an article on them. If you want to learn more about flamethrowers, and before you send us a listener mail, we are aware of flamethrower exhaust systems. We've both seen grease before.
Yeah.
You can type any word you want to into the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com. It'll yield something interesting, I guarantee you that. So, Chuck, listener mail?
Not quite.
Oh, okay.
Well, we got to do our quick plugs. We're going to do a little quicker this time, though, because we take like 10 minutes to do our New York plugs and everything.
New York. We're going to be at the Knitting Factory in Brooklyn on June 7th from 5:30 to 7:30. We're having a happy hour for Stuff You Should Know fans.
Come with your elbows prepared to be rubbed.
Stay Wednesday, June 9th for a trivia night to be determined.
Not TBD, my friend. We have a location and a time. It is at the Bell House in Brooklyn, New York. And show up at about 6:30, and trivia will start at 7. And this one is 18 and older. 18 to get in, 21 to drink. And if you're showing up alone, that's fine too. Just join up with some people when you're there and form a team and make some new friends. Come to one or both.
Yes. And then lastly, Coed and Kiva, man.
Yeah, Co-Ed Cooperative for Education, who we went to Guatemala with. If you like their bag, which is a pretty cool bag, you can donate a measly $5 with your little cell phone there.
Yeah.
Text the word STUFF, S-T-U-F-F, to 20222. And text and data rates may apply, and it's going to be added. Little $5 donation is going to be added to your bill.
Right. When you text STUFF, you'll get a reply text saying, "Are you sure?" And you just text back, "Yes." And there you go, $5.
Right.
To help out Guatemalan kids learn to read. And Kiva. We haven't thrown much love to our Kiva team lately, but we should, because, you know, as everyone knows, we hit the $100,000 mark, right?
Oh, like nothing.
In March, I believe March 19th. And since then, our moderators on our Kiva team, Glenn and Sonia, threw down the gauntlet pretty much immediately and said, let's get to $250,000.
Yeah, man. That'd be awesome.
We are on track right now by Glenn and Sonia's estimate to hit the $200,000 mark around August 26th. Well, actually, we want to hit $250,000 around August 26th.
Is that the deal?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we need to step it up a little bit. If you want to join the Stuff You Should Know Kiva.org team, you can go to www.kiva.org/team/stuffyoushouldknow and sign up and get a warm feeling in your heart when you donate. And remember, this is micro-lending, so that money actually comes back to you. It's repaid.
Yeah, and if you have a cold heart, you can actually even pull your money back out and get it back if you want.
Yes.
But it's more fun to reloan.
It totally is.
It really is.
All right, so there you have it.
All right, so listener mail, my friend. I'm going to call this, I love this dude, and his name is Guy.
Okay.
And not as in, hey, Guy, his real name is Guy.
I gotcha.
Guy from San Francisco says, guys, just listen to the Art Theft podcast. And by the way, we do know about the Paris heist that just went down.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yes.
Very intriguing for future monetary incentive. Neither here nor there. However, I have a little habit that I thought I might like to share that loosely pertains. I have never stolen art knowingly. However, I do frequently and I'm subjected to, I travel frequently and I'm subjected to much distasteful art. Guilty of being a budget traveler. So there's the rub. But to amuse myself, I like to take the horrible art off the wall, take it out of the glass and frame, and add the ever so slightest detail.
This guy's wonderful.
He does this in hotels. A chicken in the corner by the barn, a seagull flying over the crest of a wave, a beer bottle and fishing pole by the babbling brook. I do it in every hotel, motel, hotel, hostel, bungalow, you name it, I will stay there and I will change the art.
They have art in hostels now?
Eh, probably not. It makes me chuckle to think that maybe one day someone will be staring at an awful hotel painting and look closely and notice one of the gallant cowboys has a tin of skull by his left boot heel. So, if you stay in cheap hotels, keep your eyes out, people. You may have stayed where Guy from San Francisco has stayed. Just don't turn on the black light. That's all I have to say.
That's awesome. That is awesome, man. I love to hear people doing cool stuff.
Vandalism.
Yeah. But it's vandalism with like an eye toward coolness.
It's fundalism.
Right. Well, if you're a starving artist who shows your work at the Airport Hilton Conference Room, we want to hear from you. Just send us an email to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Want more How Stuff Works? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.